Today's scripture reading is Mark 5, verses 21 through 43. And when Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side, a great crowd gathered about him, and he was beside the sea. Then came one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name, and seeing him, he fell at his feet and implored him earnestly, saying, "My little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her so that she may be made well and live." And he went with him, and a great crowd followed him and thronged about him. And there was a woman who had had a discharge of blood for 12 years, and who had suffered much under many physicians, and had spent all that she had, and was no better, but rather grew worse. She had heard the reports about Jesus and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his garment, for she said, "If I touch even his garments, I will be made well." And immediately the flow of blood dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. And Jesus, perceiving in himself that power had gone out from him, immediately turned about in the crowd and said, "Who touched my garments?" And his disciples said to him, "You see the crowd pressing around you, and yet you say, 'Who touched me?'" And he looked around to see who had done it. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease." While he was still speaking, there came from the ruler's house some who said, "Your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further?" But overhearing what they said, Jesus said to the ruler of the synagogue, "Do not fear, only believe." And he allowed no one to follow him except Peter and James and John, the brother of James. They came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue, and Jesus saw a commotion, people weeping and wailing loudly. And when he had entered, he said to them, "Why are you making a commotion and weeping? The child is not dead, but sleeping." And they laughed at him. But he put them all outside and took the child's father and mother and those who were with him and went in where the child was. Taking her by the hand, he said to her, "Talitha kumi," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, arise." And immediately the girl got up and began walking, for she was 12 years of age. And they were immediately overcome with amazement, and he strictly charged them that no one should know this, and told them to give her something to eat. This is the word of God.
This is our third and final message on this particular passage, and this will also complete our series for the time being. At some point, not sure when, we'll return back to the Gospel of Mark, and we'll pick up this incomparable Jesus, because I hope you can feel this. Jesus, just meeting him, seeing him, there's nobody like him. And it's actually been wonderful. I hope it's been wonderful for you. It's been wonderful for me, just looking at Jesus and seeing what he does. So one more message entitled Waiting on God. And that's a hard thing to do. I think that's what this is. This final portion, this passage is challenging us and causing us to think about. So let's get into it, okay? Part one, waiting is painfully hard. Have you ever waited on God for something really important? Waiting is hard, okay? Part two, disappointment with God. What if you wait on God and he doesn't answer the way you thought or had hoped? It could really, really hurt. That's what we're going to talk about, okay? And part three, power theology or the hope of the cross. I want to challenge you on what kind of a God are you looking for? And what kind of a God is being offered to you in the person of Jesus? And it's this question, power theology or the hope of the cross? So let's go to part one. Waiting is painfully hard. Let's go to verse 35, all right? And I want to ask you this question. So What you have is a story, and then you have another important incident. It's like a story that's sandwiched in between this other bigger story. And this other, like, larger thing that's going on is there is somebody who comes to Jesus. His name is known. He's prominent in the community. And it's super urgent. And you don't even quite know. Maybe he doesn't even entirely believe in Jesus, but he's desperate. No doctor could help. His daughter is about to die. And he said, I've heard Jesus can heal, so let's try this because it's either him or nothing. So he goes to Jesus, and Jesus says, okay, let's go. And then Jesus stops. He interrupts this trip, and he takes a long time. How long does he take? And this is what happens, verse 35. While he was still speaking, this is Jesus, there came from the ruler's house some who said, your daughter's dead. Why trouble the teacher any further? How long did it take for Jesus to go, well, wait, who touched me? And the disciples are exasperated, like, what are you talking about? And there's commotion. And finally, this really desperate, hurting, poor woman comes forward. And he talks to her. He ministers to her. And it takes long enough that the girl dies. And I want to ask you to put yourself in Jairus' shoes. We have been focusing on this really hurting woman. I gave you two messages, particularly where she's the focus. I think in a lot of ways she is the focus. But now I want to shift gears and look to his story and what's going on with his daughter. And I want you to put yourself in his shoes. And I want you to ask you this question. Have you ever gone to God and ask for something that nobody else can help with? You look around, nobody else can help with this. And you desperately need this problem, this tremendously horrible problem, to be fixed or to be healed. And it needs to happen soon. And so you pray, and you pray, and you pray, and you're waiting for him to answer. So that's the situation Jairus is in. He's asked Jesus. Jesus goes, okay, let's go. And then Jesus goes, well, you could wait, because I've got other things to do right now. And it must have been absolutely excruciating. Have you ever been there? I was, in preparation for this message, I actually listened to Tim Keller preach on this. He's preached on this twice. And he didn't say anything quite different in the two different messages. He made this one comment, which kind of stuck out to me, which is that between these two people, you've got the guy whose daughter is about to die, okay? And you have a woman who has a chronic problem for 12 years. Now, she is suffering intensely, absolutely. And probably nobody sees that, but Jesus knows that. But if you just kind of step back and think about that from a medical point of view, one is a chronic problem and she's not going to die. But the other one is the girl's going to die any minute. Now, from a logical, rational, medical point of view, why would you choose the chronic problem? Okay, I mean, like, you know, I actually just looked over, and we have a doctor, and he kind of like this, right? If you did that as a doctor, you get sued for malpractice. I mean, people would just go nuts, okay? And so Jesus, as the healer, as the doctor, he just picked the wrong case. He literally picked the wrong case to favor. And now the most terrible thing just happened. She died. Okay? I thought about this and thought about this. You know, I don't know what you're like. Okay. When I was younger, I read this story, I heard this story, somebody taught in this story, did a Bible study on the story. Okay, fine, great, okay? And then I became a parent. And all of a sudden, this story took on a different meaning. I don't know what you're like, but this is something I kind of regularly do in my life. I put myself into an imaginative scenarios as to what I can handle. I'm a father, I'm a husband, I'm also a leader. There's a lot on my plate, okay? I used to be really afraid of failing as a pastor. I'm still afraid of that. But that isn't really one of my highest things I'm afraid of, okay? I'm afraid of that maybe, like, you guys will hate me and leave, and then, of course, that means I failed as a pastor, okay? And then since I failed at my job, I'll feel like I failed as a man, and then I will hate myself. Okay, that used to be a regular thing. But over the years, the Lord has washed that out of me. And I've kind of come to a deeper rest on Him. So I'm not so afraid of that. I regularly think of scenarios where my wife will drive to work, and then she'll get hit by a car on the way home, and I won't have her. I've been thinking about that actually pretty regularly, because at night she's not here, because as a number of you guys know, she's away. So right now the Park House is kind of pathetic. There's no women in the house. So last week I told you about how important it is to have women around. I mean, we feel it. Hudson and I are like, this kind of stinks. No women in the Park House right now. And every night when I'm in bed, I think about that scenario. What if I lose my wife? I still think I could come back from that, okay, and have joy, have hope, have courage and righteousness, and love you and serve you. But the one I'm, like, so afraid of is if I lose one of my kids. If I lose one of my kids, if I have to bury one of my kids, I think I would be so, it's okay, I'm getting a little emotional, just thinking about it, okay? I mean, this just it can't happen. I've heard that if you lose your child, sometimes people get divorced. The stress and the pain is so tremendous. And the person is so broken and mangled that, like, the marriage, like, breaks apart. I think our marriage is pretty strong. I think our marriage could survive it. But I'll tell you this, I don't know if I can survive it. So when I put myself in Jairus' shoes, that verse, that's terrible. That's, like, more than terrible. That is the knife that would go into me, and it would just bleed and bleed and bleed. I don't think it would ever stop bleeding. That's how I feel about that. So, I want to say, when you read the Bible, you got to ask this question. There's all these things. This person had a disease. Well, last week we had this kind of intense message about women and what wounds them. And the Bible calls it's like a whip into her suffering. Well, in Jairus, this is a whip into his suffering. And if you are waiting on God and He lets you down, wow, that's an intense piece of pain. Yet, the Bible also says this, and I want to give you a verse, and this passage is a good example of this, which is that, let me take you to that verse. This is Isaiah 55, verses 8 and 9. And this is what God says. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts higher than your thoughts. Jesus picked the wrong person to prioritize. from every rational perspective. He could have gone to the girl, then he could come back to her. But he didn't. He let her die. God's ways are not our ways. He chooses and he sees things differently. It is a fact in our head that we can kind of like accept up here at some kind of like rational level. You're a Christian, you know the right answer. Oh, yeah, okay, I can accept that. Until your kid dies. If your child dies, maybe you won't be able to accept that. I'm a professional Christian and I'm your shepherd. And in my heart, I'm not sure I could accept this truth if I lose one of my kids. I'm just being really honest with you, okay? But this verse is this passage in action. God is in the flesh, and he's saying, my timing, you can wait, and you will wait. My ways are higher than your ways. And boy, that can be really hard, okay? But this passage is challenging us to go there, okay? Let's go to part two. Disappointment with God. So, try to imagine how Jairus must have felt. It's, just absolute devastation. They don't actually show you what his face must have been like, what his heart must have been like at that moment when the people came up and said, don't bother him anymore, it's over. Now, some of you, if you've been with me a long time, you will have heard me talk about this. And in our day and age, this just needs to come around every few years. So you probably forgot I talked about this, if you've heard it before. And it'll be good for you to hear it again. And if you've never heard it before, it's really good for you to hear it again. Okay? I'm going to take you to this book, Disappointment with God by Philip Yancey. It's been around quite a long time. It's not a famous book. It should be. And I read it many years ago. Philip Yancey is a wonderful Christian writer and thinker. He used to be editor at large at Christianity Today. And he wrote a tremendously honest book about being disappointed by God. And he had talked to a lot of different people who felt that God let me down. I thought God was going to do this for me. I prayed so hard. I needed this to happen. And he let me down. So there are people who waited on God and they didn't get the answer that they thought, okay? So an example is like, he talked to a young man who, when he was a boy, his parents would fight, and he prayed like crazy that they would not divorce. But they did. And it was the single most terrible day of his life. And not only did his parents divorce and then he lost his family, he lost his faith. And he walked away from God. He talks about a person whose mother had cancer. And she prayed, please don't let my mom die. But she died. And more than her mother dying, that woman too grew very distant from the Lord and walked away from God. So he heard all these kinds of stories. And he wrote this book to wrestle with it. And I read this and I was like, that is so incredibly honest. Now, let me just say a little something about honesty about God. I know some of you come to church because I'm like this. I'll just tell you a little something about how I'm like. I don't like cheap answers at church. Let me tell you, let me just be really blunt. I hate cheap answers at church. Christians, we come to church And inside, we're just dying. But you come to church, and there's a Christian answer. And we got to put on this Christian correct answer. And inside your head, you're like, I know that's the right answer. But inside, I'm dying. I'm bleeding out here. And I know people get there. It's happening outside, and they're not coming to church, even if they used to go to church. And there are people in church, they do believe in God, or kind of believe in God, want to believe in Jesus, but this is where they are. And so I refuse to be cheap about it. And I want to say something to you if you are a member of Revive Church. I do not want our church to ever be cheap about it. In this room, in our small groups, the GLFs, or in our Life and Life Missional Discipleship groups, you can cry. You can hurt. You can scream. You can say, I believe in Jesus, but I'm screaming at him right now. Okay? Because this is what it's like to be human. So that's why I like this book. Now, I'll tell you something else that just really stuck with me from this book. He said this, all these people needed a miracle. They needed God like power, like miracle power. God like supernatural boom power, like stuff that only God can do. And he didn't do it. And they even had faith that he'd do it. And Yancey says, is there ever a place in the Bible where God did stuff like that? And everybody could see the miracle, miraculous right before your face. And it was a regular, everyday occurrence. So that's what he did. He like poured through the Bible and said, did this happen? And he said, it did. The Israelites were in the wilderness. They could not make food. They could not grow food. So they'd wake up in the morning, and there was food. After 6 days, God says, do not pick up food on the seventh day. That's the rest day. And on the seventh day, there'd be no food. And you're supposed to pick up double on the sixth day, and they did. And if they picked up too much and tried to save it, it would rot. The cloud would be in the morning, and they would know where to go. Wouldn't that be awesome? If you could go outside, and there'd be a cloud, and you're like, that's my cloud. That's God's way. You just go, oh, it's... You just walk along the way. You're like, I need a wife. God, I need a wife. And the cloud would just go, bang, and then I'd meet Grace. Right? Wouldn't that be awesome? That's what it was like. And then, like, bad things would happen to them, and God would miraculously heal them. That's what it was like. So they got power. At night, there would be a flame that they knew was from God. And you know what the people were like during that period? They were horrible. They were horrible. They were wretched. They were idolatrous. They were wicked. That's what they were like. So if we get the power of God, it actually doesn't work. It doesn't reach us and heal us and change us the way we need. That's what Yancey concluded. That's one of the best takeaways I ever got out of a book. I read that and said, wow. Okay, that just like blew me away, right? And my conclusion was, and this is not easy to say, but I want to say this to you because some of you, you're bleeding now and you're hurting. But I want to say this to you, and I say this as your shepherd, and I say this from the Bible. I think this is what God is saying. Sometimes we need that disappointment. Because God will love you a deeper way. and a better way. Now I'm going to take you to a place in the Bible that's just like this passage, except it's actually worse. It's actually worse. It's another place of wait. And it is crazy. It's absolutely nuts. And most people, when they look at this passage, they never think of it as a wait on God passage. They only think about the miracle on the back end of the story. But if you follow the passage very, very carefully, it's pretty nutty. It's Jesus is so unreasonable. He's so unreasonable. You know, as you follow the story, it'll make you want to scream. So it's John chapter 11. Let me take you there. Verse 1. Famous story. And I'm just trying to help you color it a little differently, okay? Verse 1. Now a certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary, and her sister Martha. It was Mary who anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was ill. So Mary had utterly wrecked her life. She had been in like horrible sexual sin, and she had destroyed her life, but Jesus forgave her and healed her. And then they were close. Crazy, okay? Verse 3. So the sisters went to him, saying, Lord, he whom you love is ill. But when Jesus heard it, he said, and catch this, this illness does not lead to death. This is in the Bible. This illness does not lead to death. It is for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it. So when I was preparing this message and reread this, I was getting upset. I was going, what are you talking about? This illness does not lead to death. If you know what's going to happen, this illness does lead to death. Lazarus is going to die. And yet Jesus is going, this illness does not lead to death. It's nuts. My ways are higher than your ways. My thoughts are as high as the heavens are above the earth. My thoughts are higher than your thoughts. Can you hear those words behind Jesus talking Looney Tunes? He sounds Looney Tunes. Okay? Verse 5. Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. Can you see how this story is like almost the same thing? Except it's a lot worse. Jairus, he stays long enough for his daughter to die. Lazarus is his personal friend. Mary and Martha are personal friends. It still just blows my way when I read this passage. Jesus loved Martha and his sister and Mary. So that's why he stuck around 2 more days. I was just going like, what the heck? So if you grew up in the church, you know this story. You ever paid attention to this part? I never noticed this till about, 6 or 7 years ago. Some of you have been with me. You've heard me preach this. I preached this on an Easter Sunday morning. And I never really paid attention to it till I prepped that sermon. And it just completely, I remember just laughing and like getting like laughing and crying. It was like, this is nuts, okay? And now as I'm looking at it again, it still feels absolutely bananas. Mary and Martha are waiting. Their brother is dying. So Jesus sticks around longer? Let's fast forward in the story. Verse 17. Now when Jesus came, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. So he stuck around two more days. Then we have to walk because, you know, there's no, like, bullet train from Bethany, you know, from wherever he was to Bethany. So when Jairus' daughter died, she hadn't been dead for very long. They laughed at him. But here, there is no question. He's gone 4 days. In fact, there's a place in there, we won't read it, but Jesus goes, open it up. And they're like, it's going to smell. So it's very clear he's dead. So Jesus made Mary and Martha wait long enough for their brother to be dead for 4 days in the tomb. Bethany was near Jerusalem, about 2 miles off. So that's another way of saying Jesus could have gotten there pretty fast. Can you walk 2 miles? Any of you guys on that Fitbit thing? 10,000 steps, 2 miles. You're supposed to be able to do it. 2 miles, you know how long it takes to walk about 2 miles? If you go a little briskly, you can do it in 30 minutes. Jesus didn't take that 30 minutes. And many of the Jews had come to Mary and Martha and Mary to console them concerning their brother. Jesus wasn't there, but they were there for them. Verse 20. So when Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him. But Mary remained seated in the house. Martha said to Jesus, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Now, let's just take a time out here. How did she say it? How did she say it? Put yourself now in her shoes. How would you have said it? I've thought about this and thought about this. I can think of multiple different scenarios. If you're a director and you're making that movie, so, you know, they're making this, The Chosen. I don't know if they've gotten this part in The Chosen yet. Okay? But that director can make a decision. But I can imagine she might say things like this. If you had been here, Lazarus wouldn't be dead. In other words, she's mad. And she's blaming. And she's got a pretty good point. I could see her saying it that way. I could also see her say it this way. Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. So on the outside, she says it that nice way. But on the inside, it's not anywhere near that nice. Because she's a good Christian. On the outside, you got to say it the nice way. Because it's Jesus, you know. And he's right in front of my face. But the inside, she's torn apart. Verse 22. But even now I know that whatever you ask from God, God will give you. So maybe she says it super upset. But now I got to be a Christian again. Okay, whatever you ask, I know God will give you. If you just read it in the kids' Sunday school way, you're like, of course, she's such a faithful person. She just believes that. But if you put yourself in her shoes, maybe not. Because Jesus is pretty late. Verse 23. Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. Martha said to him, I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day. So you know what she's saying? She's saying good theology. I know on the last day he's going to have the resurrection. He'll live forever. Because he's with you. He believes in you. But today, he's dead. And we are in a horrible place. So that's how I read what she's saying. She's like, I don't know what you're doing, but I'll give you the good theology. Verse 25. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection, the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. And everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. And then, here's the question. Do you believe this? Her brother's dead. This is the conversation Jesus is having. Do you believe this? And this is her answer. Yes, Lord, I believe you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is coming into the world. So try to read between the line here. You know what I think she's doing? She's not answering the question. She's actually not answering the question. I'm the resurrection. I know your brother's dead. Okay, like we all know he's dead. If somebody believes in me, that person does not die. Because I'm the resurrection. Do you believe that? And she doesn't actually give an answer to that question. She goes, yeah, you're the Christ. That's the part I believe. That's her answer. Martha's the good sister. I think she's the older sister. Let's fast forward, verse 31. When the Jews who were with her in the house, consoling her, saw Mary rise quickly and go out, they followed her, supposing that she was going out to the tomb to weep there. You know, so Martha, after this conversation, she leaves Jesus and tells Mary, hey, Jesus is here. So then Mary goes out. Verse 32. Now when Mary came to where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet, saying to him the exact same thing. She says the exact same thing. Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Now, try to put yourself in her shoes. How did she say it? I think she could barely say it. She's probably just like bawling like crazy. Jesus, if you'd been here, we'd still have our brother. And inside, she's just utterly ripped apart. Verse 33. When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in his spirit and greatly troubled. That's English for Jesus' heart was ripped apart. He said, where have you laid him? And they said to him, Lord, come and see. And it's such a simple, it's actually the shortest verse in the whole Bible. Jesus wept. Here she is, utterly ripped apart. She says the exact same words as her sister. But in her case, she can't be a good Christian. She's completely broken and destroyed. And Jesus is just ripped apart. And he cries. Verse 36. So the Jews said, see how he loved him? Let's go to the next slide. I want to say it to you differently. See how he loved her? I think that's actually what the story is trying to say. See how he loved her. He came to Martha. She's just trying to hold it together with good theology. Jesus gives her bigger theology, even though she can't even answer his question. She came to Mary. He doesn't give her any theology. He says, I'm here. And I'm ripped apart with you. I'm crying with you. See? You see how he loves her? Let's go to part 3. power theology or the hope of the cross? And I want to ask you a question. This is the question. What kind of a God do you desire in your life? What kind of a God do you desire in your life? I want to take you back to our passage. Mark 5:33. The woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your whip." I told you last week, the word means something more like a Roman whip. That is the thing that they use on a person before they crucify him. That whip, Jesus got. Be healed of your whip. Verse 41, taking her by the hand, he said to her, so now he goes to the little girl, Talitha Kumi, which means, "Little girl, I say to you, get up." I gave this to you last week. This is in the Mark 5 passage. There's a place where Jesus says, "Daughter." And he said to the dead girl, "Hey, dearest little lady." That's what Talitha means. "My dear little beloved one, get up." And you follow the passage, what you have is the words of God to those who are absolutely hurting. And then there is a whip, the affliction. And that word absolutely is made you supposed to make you think about his affliction. Not just her affliction, his affliction. And then he says, "Arise." And in there, can you see? It's so interesting. It's rather subtle, but very, very clearly there. That's kind of why you pay me, so I can see this. When I see this now, I can't not see it. If you read this when you're young, you're like, "I don't see the gospel in there." But after you see it, you can't not see it, unsee it. Oh, the gospel is there. I'll go back to this question, the next slide. The God of power or the incarnate God of the cross? I think Mark chapter 5 is pointing to our healing. We all need a healing that's more than you have this chronic illness. And we need a healing more than I need you to do this miracle. There are people so broken inside. And there is a healing that's more than the miracle healing. You and I are just like those Israelites in the wilderness. If you get a miracle before your eyes, it will blow your mind. But it will not change you and transform you in the deepest place in your soul. You'll get the miracle, and then you'll stay in the wilderness and not really deeply change, probably. That's how most of us are. But actually, the healing we need is the one where Jesus takes the affliction. And he says, "Wait on me. And my death will take away all your dying. And my life, the resurrection life, will fill up every loss and every disappointment and every pain that you ever had, and then some." That's the God who came to earth. If we only had a God who had like power and snapped our fingers and just fixed our problems, you know, I think a lot of us, we'd like that God. Like, lottery, please. That'd be good. Get me into that college. That'd be great. No more debt. Kid, my child is dying. And this cancer, just gone, please, please. If we could have that God, I'm pretty sure we would take that God. But I want to really ask you this question. That God doesn't have to love you. The real God actually will give you something more than miraculous healing. He'll give you more than his power. He will give you himself. And when you're ripped apart inside, he'll be with you. To prove to you that I will die with you. And then he came to die so we could see it with our eyes. See? That's how he loves us. So let's close here. John 11:25. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. And everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. It's an interesting turn of phrase. We all know we're going to die unless Jesus like comes back tomorrow. There will be some people who will be lucky. You know, if you like Jesus shows up while you're still alive, you just get boom, resurrection, transformation, and you never have to die. So for any of you who don't want to, Jesus, I don't want Jesus to come back tomorrow, think about that. Okay? Think about that. I think that'd be pretty good if I were you. But if he doesn't come back, we all know we're going to die. But you know what he's saying? He's the resurrection and the life. If you believe in him, even your death, even your dying, won't be like dying. Can you believe that? That's the gospel. That's Jesus. Let's pray.